This is an ambitious project, to say the least. I was thinking to myself, some of my favorite things you've done, Joan of Arc at the stake, Mass, Candide. I mean, big projects. You seem to like big projects.
Yeah, I love big projects. And this is almost my favorite project so far because it's a piece that I have never heard live and I've never conducted before. So it's just so exciting.
10 movements. It's about 80 minutes long, huge orchestra, and the Ondes Martino, which probably nobody, I've never seen one. There's so much sound in this.
It's a spectacle. I mean, that's all I can say. That, you know, the sound world is so different from anything our listeners would be expecting with this instrument, the Ondes Martino, which is really a cousin of the theremin, that woo, that kind of sound. The wonderful player, Natalie Forget, and we have her in the front of the stage so you can see what she's doing. It's a very complex, it's got a keyboard and then it's got this ring that you have to adjust the pitches. He's got that and then an orchestra of well over 100 players. Lots of percussion, and then the piano soloist. So even if you're not attracted and engaged by the sound world, the spectacle, just the visual, is a lot to take in.
It's not dissonant. I mean, this is not ugly music, and in many parts, it is, frankly, rapturously beautiful music.
The fact that he creates his own musical vocabulary, which does have some dissonance in it, of course, but he was obsessed with birds, the bird calls, bird songs. He became an expert in that. So you hear that woven in as well, or his love of percussion and bells. So you hear those woven in. And while, of course, there are some sections that are thorny to listen to, I think it's because of those sections that the other parts sound even more rapturous and ecstatic.
I'm looking at the score for this. I've never seen the printed score, and that is the most intimate. It's 2 feet. It's 2 feet yeah, by about a foot and a half. Where do you begin if you're preparing this?
This was a tricky piece because I didn't want to have to carry it with me as I was traveling. So I started learning it way back in September, so that not only because it's a complex piece, but also so that I wouldn't have to carry it around. Because really, once I get it, I brought it here in a suitcase, and that's it.
It lives at the hall.
Yeah, exactly. Right now it does. It's like anything. You see, I imagine people that climb Everest. If you start thinking about the top, you're never going to make it. You just go little by little. And of course, reading a lot about Messiaen has been fascinating because of his just unique character. I mean, he knew he wanted to be a composer when he was 8 years old. He knew he had a profound faith in God when he was 8 years old. You know, he put on Shakespeare plays when he was eight. He was a kid born with a destiny. And performing this work with Jean-Yves Thibaudet as our soloist is an added bonus because Jean-Yves worked with Messiaen and Messiaen's wife, for whom it was written. She was a fantastic pianist and one of his students at the conservatory. I feel like it's just one degree of separation now.
The spirituality in this work is profound, as with all of Messiaen's work. It's both Catholic particular spirituality, but it's also spirituality for the rest of us too.
He was, of course, a devout Catholic, but his faith was quite universal. It was much broader, I think, than limited just to one organized religion. He had lived through this very, very traumatic experience during the Second World War of being in one of the prisoner of war camps. The fact that he didn't lose touch with his faith during that, but it became more fervent about believing in a greater good, a greater spirituality. And that's really his approach. Not specifically Catholic, but Catholic in the broader way.
You're doing this in two ways. You're doing off the cuff where you're playing selections from and doing discussion, and you're doing the whole thing. Thursday and Sunday is the whole thing, and Friday and Saturday is the off the cuff, right?
That's right. One at the Meyerhof and then the other at Strathmore for both. I would say try to go to both, the off-the-cuff and the entire performance, because it's possibly the only time you'll ever have the opportunity, as once-in-a-lifetime chance, to hear this piece. I think getting some insight through the off-the-cuff, I'm going to have Natalie demonstrate the Ondes Martino, we'll talk about these different influences. We have some Indian dancers who are going to demonstrate the rhythmic structure that he employs called talas, very complex Indian rhythmic formulas. I think to have that experience and then hear the whole piece could be very cool, or vice versa.
People always want to know how you do what you do. I'm looking at a million post-it notes in the score. So I have to ask, what do they all refer to? What do you use post-it notes for in the score?
My desperation post-it notes are the ones now emanating from the bottom corners, the very edges, because what happens, of course, is I put post-it notes where I want to look at something or where I want to ask a musician about or the soloist about something. And then there's so many post-it notes that there's no hierarchy. So then I start putting them sticking out diagonally from the corner. So these are the ones that are the real danger spots.
That is fabulous. Thank you so much for talking to us. It's going to be a fascinating weekend.
Please, everybody, come and experience this with us. This has been on the musician's wish list since I arrived.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure. Thank you, Jonathan.